Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and however you are listening to our program, whether it's online or over the radio, God has placed us in your life today, and we are so glad that you've joined us for this special broadcast. On yesterday's program, Dr. Dobson talked with some mothers and fathers who have experienced their children being diagnosed with cancer. On part two of this interview, Dr. Dobson will hear from the rest of his guests who have watched their children struggle with this disease, and some, unfortunately, who have died because of it. Dr. Dobson will also chat with Melinda Mayton, a pediatric nurse practitioner who founded a ministry called the Lighthouse Family Retreat. This organization ministers to hurting families by providing them with a beach getaway where they can rest and experience the true joy of the Lord. Okay, let's dive now into part two of this emotional conversation on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
One of the things that makes cancer unique, maybe not unique, but this is a characteristic of the disease, is that it jerks you around emotionally so much. You think it's going to be okay, and then you find out it's not going to be okay. Then there is hope. There's the chemotherapy, and it seems to be working. And for a time, it does. And for some people, it does permanently. But you don't know who those are. And for many, many people, you're back into it again. And you're up and you're down and you're good and you're bad and you worry and you're hopeful. And it just does terrible things to the emotions, especially to the emotions of the entire family. Every person is affected by it. It is a family disease, even though perhaps only one is the victim of it. And in the program last time, I think it was Nikki that said, you never get away from it. You don't take vacations. You don't go away for a while. You can't think about something else for a while. It is so intense. It is 24 hours a day, especially when it's acute. Well, with us is Nikki and Tony and Corey and Melinda. And we began with the stories of Nikki and Tony. I won't take the time to repeat them, except to say that, Nikki, you lost your precious little boy at 8 years of age.
Yes,
his name was Coulter, and he died of
Complications after a bone marrow transplant.
Yeah.
He went into multi-organ failure after he caught adenovirus.
Went into that because there was hope.
There was hope.
And then hope was dashed.
That's right.
That's what I'm talking
about.
And
hope is real. I still hold on to that. Hope is real. It's a tangible, real thing for parents with children with cancer.
But
you cannot lose hope.
You know where Coulter is today.
That's right.
There's no doubt about that.
That's right.
It's the crown of righteousness. It is the hope of glory. That it's not the end. It's just the beginning, right?
That's right.
And Tony, just very quickly, your daughter was 13 when she developed leukemia, and she's now 17 and is apparently preparing for
bone
marrow transplant.
Yes.
And you're hopeful.
We're hopeful.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
we are.
Grateful.
Grateful, yeah. Very grateful.
But you've lived with this for 4 years now.
Yes, we have.
And your 17-year-old is resilient? She's making it?
She is absolutely resilient. And when she was in the hospital getting the worst of the chemotherapy, she was working at Chick-fil-A. And she didn't want them to know she had cancer. So she didn't tell them. And she would take the chemotherapy that would go in her, and you could literally see her face turning green, and she would start, expelling all the way home. And I would tell her, I'm calling your boss and telling them you're not coming to work. And she was like, no, Mama, I'm going to work. So I would drive her to
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah,
you know what courage. I I can't help but be mindful of people who are listening to us today who have far less to cope with, but who whine about it all the time.
Yes.
You know, there are a lot of people out there.
Mm-hmm.
And here you got a 17-year-old girl who hasn't even started life yet, hasn't tasted all of its joys and pleasures yet, and yet she is not despairing.
Yeah.
Okay, Corey, give us a little summary of what you told us last time, and then take it on.
Okay. And Natalie was 5 when she was diagnosed ALL, which is, as the doctors say, if it's the one to get, it's the one you want, which, you know, at that time, that's not real comforting, but that's what they tell you. But it is, they have protocols to deal with that. So we are very fortunate in that regard. And, you know, the flood of emotions that just run through my head and the family's head and everything, you don't know what to expect. You're walking to an area you don't have any clue about where you're headed.
And Nikki, there was no protocol.
There was no
for
protocol.
Coulter, was
there was
it?
No plan.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it almost makes you jealous.
It does.
To be true, that's just the truthful, honest answer.
Yeah.
You know, I would look at people who had leukemia and I'd say,
at least there's a way to fight.
At least they have a plan.
Yeah.
They have a plan A and a plan B. And if plan B doesn't work, we'll go to plan C. And we were just sort of, well, let's pop a fly ball and see what happens. And we'll try this and see what happens. And it was very scary. And
there's a flip side, because I remember walking down the halls of the ward with the children, because, you know, you're always going to the hospital for whatever. And there are kids in there with just devastating illnesses compared to leukemia. It's just, you know, you almost feel blessed. Even though your child has leukemia, you're like, you know, at least there's a strong hope here. All these kids have hope, but there's real strong hope for that. So,
and Natalie did lose her hair, as did Christian, right?
Yes, she doesn't have
both
any.
Of them.
Right, and for girls, you know, that's a big thing. I'm sure it is for boys too, but not as much as it is for girls. And she handled it very well. She really did. And for me personally, walking down that road, and everybody has different feelings about it. For me, I can remember, for first thing, and I know parents that listen to this is, you'll go through these stages. First, you find your spouse and you find out where there's history. You're looking for reasons why. You're always looking for why. Why did this happen?
Yeah.
And like, you go to your spouse and you go to yourself. Did I do some things in my past? You know, you're looking, you're grabbing at straws. And then you get mad at God, you know, after you've won the gauntlet with your spouses and your family traits or whatever. And then you start getting mad at God. So how can you let this happen to a 5-year-old child? You know, give it to me, give it to my wife, give it to anybody but this 5-year-old child. How can this God that is so great and so strong give this to a child that has just started out in life? And there was a huge amount of time that I spent that I struggled with that for a long,
you know,
long time.
That's what I wrote about in my book, When God Doesn't Make Sense, that you know he hung the entire universe in place with his word.
Yes.
You know there's nothing he doesn't know. He created the human body. He knows every part. He knows every solution to every problem. He doesn't need a solution. He can just speak it.
Yep.
And when you call on him in agony in the midnight hours, and in some cases the answer is not forthcoming or doesn't seem to be, you know, later you can come to terms with that and say, I see that you are here all the time, that you have not lost control. You're not up in heaven someplace wringing your hands saying, what am I going to do about this child?
Right.
Or about Corey? I don't have an answer. You know that's not true.
That's right.
And yet the anger that's there is, I think, in some ways more difficult than for those who have no faith,
right,
and aren't counting on it.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I know they went through it too. You're trying to find why. You just answer questions. I guess just the way you're brought up, but and part of that for me in the enlightenment of myself and in my family, it brought me and my wife so much closer together, because now she's geared toward taking care of Natalie, and then I've got the other two to take care of. So we've learned to be more of an organized family, because, you know, we felt that we pretty much all had everything going for us. You know, we felt comfortable in our lives, you know, which most everybody is at the time. And then all of a sudden it shatters it, but it really brought us a lot closer together. It really did. And for me, I can remember with all this anger with everybody and why, it finally, it just exhausted me. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm completely, have no control. And that was a day that I turned my daughter back to God.
Oh.
Which she was never mine to give back. She's always been God's child, but in my mind, she was. And I can remember just saying, okay, Lord, either you're going to take her and she's going to be better with you, or you're going to find it fit for her to stay here with us. And he is in your hands. I mean, and that was such a day for me that just lifted everything off of me. It was incredible.
Now, she was 5 years old. Natalie
was
5 years old when she was diagnosed.
Yes.
She is now?
Not, just turned 10 yesterday.
10, and she is in complete remission.
We have been truly blessed, and I tell people today it's like it never happened, and we just leave such a quote, and everybody can agree with this. You look for normalcy. You look for normal lives. When you have kids with cancer, that's all you search for, is to be normal. You want to be normal, and it's great.
And the other children are doing okay.
Oh, yes, sir, just doing great.
And Tony, that's true for your other children.
They're good, yeah. Man, I will say this, though. My oldest daughter, because of Christian's illness, and you brought this up while ago, that it affects the whole family. And the way that she controlled hers is with an eating disorder, which was uncovered when Christian relapsed. Yeah. But she's been battling it for 3 years. And so she is battling that disorder. And what is coming out in her therapy is because she just could not, she couldn't control the circumstances. But she couldn't deal with the fear.
You know, there's a different kind of reaction with every one of those children, and often, unfortunately, between the husband and wife. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw that at Children's Hospital over and over and over again, where families were weakened. Many of them were divorced as a result of it. Mm-hmm. They began to blame each other. There was anger at each other, not only at God, but at each other and everything else. And it really broke my heart, because at a time when they most needed one another, they were fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that'll get you through that is prayer. Not only the prayer of the families involved, because God is there and He's weeping mm-hmm. with you,
yes.
but also the prayers of friends who know
yes.
the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that, Melinda, I want to hasten to you're part of the story, because I do admire you. I said that last time. You and I only met today, but I've read about you, and I know what you do. You were a pediatric oncology nurse. You chose to spend your time with children like those that we've heard. And there aren't very many people who can do that or want to do that. Why?
I did. Well, I grew up in an incredible family, and loving parents, lots of brothers and sisters and cousins. And I think that began to shape just my love and passion for people. And when we were really young, we started going to the beach together. And even to this day, we just spent our, I guess it was our 30th year going to the same place, and there were 50 mm-hmm. people from my family there at the mm-hmm. beach. But it was an amazing time, and I have a sister that's 10 years younger than I am. And when she was born, she had medical, a lot of serious medical problems. And then when I was ready to go to college, I was ready to go to the University of Georgia and go into business school. And she had some complications from her problems when she was born. And I remember going up to the hospital and walking into the ICU where she was, and I remembered seeing her with her braided hair and laying there with tubes in her nose and everywhere, and looking at her, and she just had this blank stare at me, and she was so precious to me. I felt like, in some ways, a mother to her, even mm-hmm. though we had a great mother. But I've adored kids even when I was a child. I loved them. And I remember her just getting this big grin on her face, and I looked over my shoulder, and her nurse had come in the room. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, wow, you know, it was so impactful to me that nurse could have such an impact on her life and bring her joy while she was laying there. You know, I thought, if anybody could make her happy, it would have been me. And it was that nurse that came in. And so I quickly changed my major from business into nursing. And I said, you know, if I can have that impact in one child's life, that will be enough for a career for me. And so I went to the Medical College of Georgia. And when I got out of school, there was a big shortage for nurses. And I saw a video about a summer program, a summer camp for children with cancer, and all of the head nurses were recruiting nurses. And when I saw that video, it really just pulled at my heart. And I thought, those are the families, those are the children that I want to go and care for.
Melinda, didn't it tear your heart out to have a relationship with these dying children?
You know, it did, absolutely. And I remember the first little boy that I cared for that passed away. I was, you know, a young nurse. I was 22 and just out of school. And I remember at that time spending so much time at the hospital caring for not only him but all of the kids, and getting to know the parents and the siblings and the grandparents. And I remember at his funeral, his mother gave me, that was back when Care Bears were popular. And yes. she said, you know, this was his favorite you know, nighttime companion, and we want you to have that for the difference you made in his life. And I remember weeping like I had never, you know, wept over the loss of him, because he really had become a part of my family, just as his whole family did. But, you know, it was something I would never go back and undo, because to be able to give yourself in such a way where you know you had some small difference in making, you know, someone's life better, it was amazing. So there have been a lot of tears, but more than that, there's just been joy in knowing that you could smile with these families.
And Nikki, did you have anyone when Coulter was dying?
I sure did.
That reached out to you in the way Melinda has.
I had several. I had several angels, and that was one of the things that I prayed for when we were going to transplant. You know, there are a lot of things I could have asked God for. I could have, you know, like Corey said, I could have been mad and said, demanded things, but I just never thought I was a person that could demand things of God. I just don't think it's right. I don't think he, frankly, would listen to me if I acted that way. But, you know, he might not like it. But I did ask for him to send angels to be with us. And I really believe that the nurses were our angels, because they, many of them, went above and beyond to not only care for us, but to take a special effort with Coulter because he was deaf. Many of them learned how to sign his favorite things, went out of their way to learn how to talk to him and make him feel comfortable and play jokes on him, where many people have had stepped aside or stepped back and said, I can't, sign language is too hard, or I'm afraid or whatever. They reached out and they hugged him and they kissed him and they thought he was beautiful and they told him he was beautiful. And as a parent, they are beautiful to you, but so often other people see the little bald head and they see the problems and they go, problem, problem. They see problems. They don't see the beauty. They don't see the joy and the inner spirit that just glows for you as a parent.
Outcasted too. Sometimes on the reverse side, you feel a little bit outcasted from society. At least I did. I know.
Sure, you know, you can everywhere
feel
you go,
people pull back.
Sure,
and they do that to protect themselves, not to be mean.
Right.
Yeah.
But they do that to spare their own emotions.
Yeah.
You know. But you know, I would like to give a bouquet. Can you give an electronic bouquet? I would like to just throw a bouquet to all those people out there who are working in children's hospitals around the country. I know of what sacrifices that they make to work there, and especially, Melinda, those who do what you did and who give themselves tirelessly to that responsibility, and not only treat the patient but the entire family in that way.
You know, you have other siblings in the family, and this child gets so much of the attention. That's what really just made me feel like the lighthouse is such a heavenly place, is that even though Natalie or the children with diagnosis gets a lot of attention and the other children get jealous, we went to the lighthouse. It's just even keeled. Everybody just the siblings get just as much attention as the child on chemo, and you can't imagine the happiness and the togetherness that comes when we're down at this beach. It's incredible. It's in 5 days all this happens.
Well, for 2 days now, we've been heading in this direction and talking about the lighthouse. I'm glad that we've got time left for you to describe it, Melinda. You left your responsibility in pediatric nursing and have started this Lighthouse Family Retreat Center. And explain how that came about and what you're trying to do.
The Lighthouse was born from really a passion that I had for family, my own and the families that I came to love at Children's Hospital.
Including all three of
Atlanta. Absolutely. Oh, yes. We feel like one family around the table. But I had the opportunity to see, you know, patients after 3 years of treatment, after 5 years of treatment, like Natalie, win her battle with cancer. But more times than not, at the end of that, the family was broken. The parents were really struggling, not communicating well, divorce. Siblings were really struggling, feeling left out and having problems in school and challenges.
Financially destitute.
Absolutely. And really, even just the whole spiritual component, I saw that at a place, even for people who were not believers. You know, when your child's diagnosed with cancer, you hope there's a God out there who can do something about it. Or, you know, there's an encounter with it, whether they're angry at God or whether they hope there is a God. And I just saw just a real need to say, hey, what if we could just get you out of the hospital and come away? And what if a group of people who would walk beside you could take care of all your daily responsibilities? You didn't have to worry about running back and forth to the clinic, and you didn't have to worry about doing the dishes and what were you going to fix for dinner, and you didn't have to worry about doctor's appointments, and you could just come away and be cared for. So all you had to focus on was your family. So you could think about reconnecting with your spouse, or you could spend time with, you know, the child that doesn't have the disease, and you could build a sandcastle with them, or read a book with them, or take a walk with them. Because at home, there's just no margin in time to do that.
And it's, it's located in Florida.
It is. We go down. I actually was in a Bible study. My plan for my life was to have six kids and, and you know, be a mom and kind of, I had my own plan.
You're not married, and that's a big question mark, too, isn't it?
You know, while I had a plan for my life, I actually was enrolled in Crown Financial Ministries, and I took this class. And one of the first questions that was asked in that class by the facilitator, they said, what would you do if you had $1 million? Well, where I grew up and in my circle of friends, I didn't know anybody that had $1 million, and I didn't even want $1 million. And so I said, if somebody gave me $1 million, I would take kids with cancer and their families down to the beach. You know, as I really began to say, God, if that's what you would have me to do with my life, I'll go. I don't know what it would take to do that. I was a nurse and not a doctor and a helper and not a, you know, leader so much of the time. And I thought, you know, God, if you would have me to do this, I'll go. And I looked all over the country for a place that, because I spent a lot of time with my family at the beach. And I know when we go to the beach, there's something about the waves and the ocean and the, and just the fun and the laughter we had. I just thought, if we could provide that, what if I could just pack one of these families up in my suitcase and take them with me? And so during that class, you know, when I realized maybe there is a different plan that God has for my life, I began to pray for it. And after about 6 months' time of praying and talking to physicians and nurses and patients I had cared for, I said, you know, would that be helpful if there was a program where you could come to the beach and be cared for and taken
away from people, the doldrum of chemotherapy?
For 5 days, right?
For 5 days. We have weekend trips and week-long trips. And so, you know, then I thought, well, where will I get $1 million to start something like this? And so I actually met up with some businessmen who had a dream to help people who had an endeavor to support others. And they said, you know, we will come behind you. And if you can, you know, if you're willing to start this organization, we'll give you a laptop and we'll help you start a board of directors and write a business plan. And all of these things, all I knew was, let's go to the beach and have some fun.
And that's where Charlie Renfro came along.
That's right.
And he's the one that called me and told me about this program.
These great businessmen came around me with great counsel and said, hey, here's some things that you need to do to get organized. And they helped me set up our 501c3 and get the business side of the Lighthouse Family Retreat started. And from there, we looked for a place to go, because I knew all of a sudden no one wrote me a check for $1 million, and we still never got $1 million check to do this. But here we are,
six years
6 years into the ministry, and we've served more than 400 families who
Isn't
have a child with cancer.
Isn't that wonderful?
And while we haven't, you know, received our $1 million check yet, we have thousands and thousands of people who say, here's $20, here's $50, press on and keep serving these families. And so it's
and
like,
you do this in the name of Christ.
We absolutely do. And we serve families of all faith, no faith, different faiths from ourselves, but we can stand before them and say, you know, Christ walked on the earth and served those in need.
We thank you for listening to today's broadcast here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. By the way, you can find out more about Melinda's ministry, Lighthouse Family Retreat, at our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Learn how you can support their organization financially, or how you can volunteer to encourage a family living with childhood cancer. You'll also find a link on today's broadcast page, and there you can listen to part one of this conversation that Dr. Dobson had with these families on yesterday's program. Find all this and more on drjamesdobson.org, and then click onto today's broadcast tab. It's right there on the landing page. While you're visiting our website, get plugged in with our various social media sites as well. Go to Facebook.com and search for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Once you're there, you can listen to our most recent broadcasts or share our insightful content with your friends and family. Like our page on Facebook by typing Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk in the search bar. If you are a Twitter or Instagram fan, you can follow our profiles there as well when you search for Dr. James Dobson, FT, as in Family Talk. Finally, remember that Family Talk is a listener-supported ministry. We rely on your generosity to work toward the mission God has called us to. We understand that times can be tough financially, especially near tax time, but every dollar you donate has an eternal impact on our listeners and those we minister to. Go to drjamesdobson.org to give online. You can pledge your gift by phone when you call 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. Thank you so much for your prayers and your constant financial support of Dr. Dobson and Family Talk over the years and especially right now. We appreciate you being with us today. Make sure to come back again tomorrow for the conclusion of this riveting interview right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.